I would like you to vote for me for dictator.
Catapult of propaganda.
Dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I would be Sharon Gilbert, everybody. And welcome to November. Oh, it's only one more day until the big day.
That's right. We're looking ahead to Tuesday and the day when we can finally put all of this madness behind us.
That's right. The bunker is all decorated up for the election. We've got posters. We have none of that stuff
up here.
We
have nothing.
Nothing. We've talked and we've looked and we've read and until our talkers and lookers and readers are sore. And we're just not looking anymore.
That's
right.
Let it
happen and let it be over.
For another 2 years anyway.
Yeah.
Actually, the presidential campaign will probably begin November
8th. Begin on the 8th.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So be prepared
for
that. Oh,
it's already begun. We've already had a couple come out and declare so they can start filling their till.
Well, we may touch on that during the next hour a little bit. We're not going to get too deeply into politics.
No,
frankly, it's a bunch of hoo-ha.
No, and besides, we're in the middle of NaNoWriMo, so we have fiction aplenty in our
brains. That's right. Now, since we took last week off, we didn't spend a lot of time telling you about National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo. We sort of made a half-hearted attempt at it last year, but this year we're going at it full bore, both laptops ablaze.
They're smoking, I'll tell you.
That's right. Sharon is over. What's your word count as of today?
It's about 14,300, but earlier today when I last updated it on the website, it was at 13,333 words.
What an interesting place to stop.
I know. I looked down and I saw 13,332, so I wrote, I.
Just to stick it in the eye of the numerologist.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's what's up there. But no, I'm past that now.
Yeah, I'm at about 4,700 words. And
I got to tell you, honey, I'm home all day. I have all day long to do this. You are a very busy man, so I applaud you for
that. Well, thank you, sweetheart. But let no one be fooled. It's just the fact that you stay home during the day. Lots of people are home during the day and don't manage to crank out 13 or 14,000 words on a manuscript in the span of 5 days as you've done. So you are amazing.
Well, you know, it just says, hey there, yes, ma'am, over and over again.
Little inside joke from NaNoWriMo 2002.
Well,
a lot of things going on this week is we've gotten past the naval exercises in the Persian Gulf, the Red Sea, and the Eastern Mediterranean so far.
So far is right. We've still got one more day and, you know, who knows what sort of surprises are in store?
Yep. Iran was in the middle of a 10-day exercise, which they launched in response to the exercises that we held.
Mm-hmm. Along with India.
Along with India in and around the nation of Iran. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of naval firepower concentrated in the Eastern Mediterranean, the Red Sea, and the Persian Gulf. In fact, as of the end of last week, the 2nd of November, we had two aircraft carriers. I mean, full-sized, full-blown aircraft mm-hmm. carriers, the Eisenhower and the Enterprise, in the mm-hmm. Red Sea.
I know.
A small body of water.
Well, you know, if I were playing a game of Risk and I saw all these pieces in place, mm-hmm. I think I would assume that a war was about to erupt.
Now, consider that we've only got 12 aircraft carriers in our entire arsenal, and right now, four of them, including the Boxer and the Bunker Hill, which are...
Well, the Boxer's really, it's a WASP.
Right. It carries helicopters and the VTOL.
Right. So it's not a full-blown thing.
Right.
But they call them bird farms.
That's a good name for them. Yeah. But those are the ships that carry Marines to mm-hmm. places where the Marines
yes.
can be used. So that's significant.
That's very significant. We're not talking about just planes and mm-hmm. pilots. We're talking about lots and lots of land-based
right.
people.
Now, consider that the Iranians, in response, when they held their military exercises over the last few days. They launched more missiles in conjunction with this military exercise than have ever been launched as part of any military exercise ever in the history of military.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Think about that.
Consider that the Shahab 3 missile can carry nuclear warheads, and they launched several of those, and has the capacity to reach into the Red Sea, especially into the Persian Gulf. The Red Sea, actually, I'm going to have to backtrack. I'm going to have to double check that. That may be a little far. But the Israelis are, of course, nervous about the Shahab-3 because it does have the range to reach Israel. Mm-hmm. The Shahab-2 missile carries cluster bombs, mm-hmm. and they launched a bunch of those as well. So we've got a lot of firepower, again, concentrated in a very small area, and it is Sharon's used a great example of an episode of The Simpsons where Bart and Lisa are having a spat, and the two of them just...
If I start kicking the air, and you happen to come into my airspace, that, and you get kicked...
That's not my fault. And if I punch the air, and you happen to walk in front of me, that's not my fault. It almost looks as though the two sides are playing a game of chicken.
Yes.
So... We pray that that's not the case because there are an awful lot of young men and women on both sides who are being used as pawns in this mm-hmm. power game. And we just hope that that doesn't escalate into something yeah. more than just a rattling of the sabers.
Amen to that, brother. Well, the big news today, of course, if you have not watched television or read a newspaper or been on the internet, Saddam Hussein was sentenced to death.
Oh, I'm shocked.
As if we didn't see that coming.
Yeah. We knew that it was a foregone conclusion.
Oh, yeah.
And he
will probably appeal it.
He will probably appeal, but I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't shed any tears for Saddam Hussein because he is a...
No, neither do I.
A man who deserved to be deposed. He is a brutal and grasping man. Whose end was pretty much a given as soon as he acceded to power by the means that he did. He used murder to get where he is, and he will die likely an unnatural death. Mm-hmm. The question is whether Iraq will explode in outright civil war over the next couple of days as a result of the verdict.
Yeah, I think it's early to tell, but definitely there are factions on either side of that. There were photos, of course, from AP and Reuters and AFP showing celebrations in the streets. But I suspect that those who are with the Ba'athist sympathies, mm-hmm. that they are going to be, well, firing off their weapons for another reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bear in mind that Saddam and his supporters are primarily Sunni, which are the mm-hmm. minority in Iraq. They are mm-hmm. the ones who've been raising most of the trouble in the central part mm-hmm. of the country.
And many of those, frankly, left before we ever got to Baghdad. Many mm-hmm. of the Sunnis left.
Right.
At least the Ba'athist party ones.
Now, the Sunni area of Iraq is the area in which a group calling itself, the group that was formerly called the Mujahideen Shura Council, has declared the Islamic State of Iraq, and they appointed an emir last week.
You talked with Laura.
Laura Mansfield.
Yes.
Yeah, Laura Mansfield has been reporting on this at her website, lauramansfield.com. She's been translating their proclamations from their website. Their proclamations have not been getting any attention outside of Laura Mansfield, as far as I can tell, at least not in the English language press. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful.
Well, you talk
the
with her every week. And mm-hmm. for those of you who listen to PID radio and yet have not gone to any of the podcasts that are available through Derek's radio station, that's an excellent resource. Every week he talks with Laura Mansfield.
Right.
And you can just download that.
Right. And Laura does an excellent job of finding information. When I talked with her last week, incidentally, she mentioned that there was a new banner ad that had been posted by As-Sahab. Now, As-Sahab is it's like the media production wing of Al-Qaeda. And they were promoting a new video that was about to be released featuring a guy who, whose name frankly escapes me. He's, an up-and-comer. He was one who escaped from a prison in Saudi Arabia and has made his way into Iraq. Mm-hmm. We've not heard anything from Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri recently, and she reminded me when we talked that the last video that we heard from Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two man in al-Qaeda, right before Ramadan, had the look of a rushed production.
Yes.
Some of the productions that he had been putting out up until this summer almost looked professional in quality, but the last one was a bit rushed. The audio, the lighting were not as good as they'd been before, which meant that either he didn't have access to the same facilities or they had to really rush the production in order to get it out in time for Ramadan. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, there was a missile strike on a school in Pakistan a couple of weeks back, and the Pakistanis said that the target of that raid was Ayman al-Zawahiri. supposedly, according to Laura, that we missed Zawahiri by about 20 minutes. So it may be that Zawahiri's on the run, and that's why we've not heard from him lately. Mm-hmm. But this new, there was a new tape out that, in fact, the new tape that Al-Sahab was putting out, or As-Sahab, rather, Laura said she actually had a copy of it, but she wasn't going to publicize it just yet, as of when I spoke with her last week, because she didn't want them to know that she'd found it so quickly.
Well, exactly. Otherwise, because, they're going to start burying their treasures a little more deeply, and
right.
She won't be able to get them.
Yeah, and she said while she does sometimes hack in and get past passwords, that getting through encrypted passwords is sometimes difficult to do. So anyway, Laura's a great, the whole point of that story is to just point out that Laura is a great font of information, and we're blessed to be able to, you know, talk with her and find some information.
Is Abu Yahya Alibi?
Yes. Yes, that's the guy. He escaped from a prison in Saudi Arabia and climbed up a couple of notches in the hierarchy of Al-Qaeda by virtue of his escape.
Okay. I know I mispronounced his name, but that, if you go to lauramansfield.com, you'll find it there.
Right. So, meanwhile, getting back to Iraq, the central part of the country, which is the primarily Sunni areas, a number of provinces there have declared themselves the independent Islamic State of Iraq, and they've appointed an emir. What's interesting, though, is that they include Kirkuk in that Sunni area. Now, Kirkuk's in the north of Iraq, but about 40% of the oil in Iraq is around Kirkuk.
Right.
Yeah, which means they're trying to get their fingers in that oil wealth pie. Mm-hmm. The Kurds aren't going to go for that. So
neither is Turkey.
Neither is Turkey.
Because Turkey would like to have that.
Turkey would like to have that as well. They don't want the Kurds to have it.
No.
Yeah. So the situation in Iraq, as long as we're on that topic there, there was a report that was issued by the New York Times. I take it back. It was published by the New York Times. It was issued by CENTCOM just a couple of weeks ago. Now, CENTCOM is the division of the military that is responsible for overseeing the situation in Iraq. They control what happens on the ground there. The classified briefing, which was in the form of a PowerPoint presentation, apparently the military lives on PowerPoint, showed in graphic form that the situation in Iraq on a scale of peace to chaos, peace on the left side, chaos on the right, was about two notches shy of chaos. And it's been sliding that way ever since the bombing of that Sunni shrine in the town of Samarra back in February.
Mm-hmm.
Things have been getting worse. The summary at the bottom of this particular slide said that in a summary of the intelligence that they've collected from Iraq, that urban areas are experiencing ethnic cleansing campaigns to consolidate control, and that violence is at an all-time high and spreading geographically.
Mm.
Now, this was published by the New York Times last week, November 1st, to be exact. Even though
the phrase order out of chaos keeps coming into my mind.
Right, yeah. And even though it was in the New York Times, I don't remember that this got a whole lot of attention in the national press.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seemed like a big deal to me.
The national press is so myopic right now about the election. That's all they want to talk about. Whatever the person outed for that week is,
right.
That's who we have to talk about.
And the topics have changed on an almost weekly basis. Go back a few weeks, Mark Foley was the topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then suddenly Michael J. Fox issued his television commercial and then and tied
it was
the
Rush
campaign
Limbaugh versus Fox.
Right, right. And incidentally tied Amendment 2, the stem cell initiative here in Missouri, to Claire McCaskill's campaign, which was a real interesting twist.
Yeah.
This week it is Ted Haggard.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just almost a weekly basis of some new, very lurid and emotional hot button issue.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, in the background, the military, the U.S. military. I mean, these are not left wing guys.
Mm-hmm.
The military, for the most part, very conservative and pretty solidly
much.
Republican.
Very much.
They are saying that the situation in Iraq is almost devolved into chaos.
We have watched this over the last year or two, though, Derek. We've seen the military sort of fracture.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was almost an infighting. Remember the war games that were going to take place off the coast of South Carolina?
Right.
And they were supposed to be led by
General Burns.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly Burns was fired, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
He was told, you're no longer fit to command.
Right. for something that generals generally don't get fired for.
For something ridiculous. He was a divorced man, essentially. He was one day away from divorce.
Yes, he was
one day away from divorce, mm-hmm. and they said, you've been seeing another woman, you're out of here for mm-hmm. moral reasons.
Right. And when you do a little digging in that, I mean, it sounds like, okay, well, he did, you know, that is misconduct. And it, well, in reality, mm-hmm. Military officers, especially four-star generals, mm-hmm. don't get fired for that reason.
Yeah, in reality, he was out and somebody else got to lead the war games. Mm-hmm. And there are those who say that there was a plan at that time to have the American Hiroshima mm-hmm. take place at that time. And it was postponed, it was canceled, whatever, because of infighting among the military leadership.
Some generals were afraid that the games were going to go live mm-hmm. and that there would be a nuclear device triggered in order to warrant a war against Iran mm-hmm. because the rules of the game, the rules of engagement mm-hmm. that have been drawn up by the vice president's office, that the next major terror attack that takes place on American soil, we attack Iran, whether Iran is responsible or not.
Exactly.
So,
In fact, at just about the same time, remember you and I were watching television one evening, and it was when Bush was in Crawford, Texas. Cindy Sheehan was camped out nearby. Mm-hmm. All the media were outside of Bush's compound there in Crawford, and Bush gave a speech. And he sounded, and I think it was CBS who said that, CNN said, oh, our hookup wasn't very good. That's why he sounded like he was in a bunker.
Yeah, the audio was really strange. It was really weird. We did a lot of digging in the
world
that day.
I still think there's something very fishy. And the word on the street at that time was that there was a possible military coup in progress.
Yeah. Now, we've not seen any evidence after the fact to that effect. But, you know, you have to wonder, because the guys in charge in the military have a good understanding. And I'm talking about the generals now, not necessarily the civilian guys at the mm-hmm. Pentagon, have a good understanding of what a war against Iran would entail. It's a much larger country than Iraq. Iraq has about 25 million people. And we are just about at our wit's end in trying to keep Iraq under control, to keep people there from killing each other and killing our soldiers. Mm-hmm. Iran is bigger, mountainous, and not to mention large areas mm-hmm. of desert. And it may well already be, or just days away from being, a nuclear power. So, yeah, it's really a bizarre situation there. Just to give you an idea of how bad the situation on the ground is for the typical Iraqi, since we went into the country there, power is available for about 12 hours a day for most of the country, but only for 4 hours a day inside the city of Baghdad, which is where a quarter of the Iraqis live.
With the exception of the Green Zone.
The Green Zone.
And then
right.
the huge super base that is being built at Qes, that has its own power plant.
Right. And that super base, of course, that's the new embassy,
yes.
which is essentially a fort.
Yeah.
It is a fort.
You spoke of Iran, and I really want to speak more about Iran before we finish for this show.
Okay.
Because there are some things that you've discovered about Iran that I think is really important, and how it relates to Nazi Germany.
But before we
go there, we're talking about the military and the infighting, and mm-hmm. I would like to address intelligence problems for just a little bit, and that's
okay.
intelligence leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Los Alamos had another breach of security. A trailer was raided for a drug raid, and can you imagine? Look at all these secrets here from Los Alamos. How'd they get there?
Now, when Sharon says a trailer, she means somebody's home.
Yes.
Somebody who was living
in a trailer.
Who was an employee with top secret access inside Los Alamos. Now, we've talked before about Los Alamos. You may remember a year ago, we talked about plutonium that was missing from Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
An audit of Los Alamos's handling of plutonium over the years revealed that over 660 pounds could be missing.
Oh, that's probably a bookkeeping error. I'm pretty sure that's what they said. So I'm sure they wouldn't lie.
Yeah, now that
right?
doesn't make me feel any better.
I know.
To give you a frame of reference.
That's a lot.
It is
that's
a lot.
That's a lot of
To
plutonium.
Give you a frame of reference, a bomb that destroyed Nagasaki, 13 pounds of plutonium.
Mm-hmm.
660, that's about 50 bombs size.
I don't know. Now, I'm not a physicist, but I believe that it takes less now.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, Los Alamos has had its share of problems. And, of course, there was the whole Wen-Ho Lee thing in which he was blamed and then later exonerated mm-hmm. for nuclear secrets being shipped over to China. But inside this trailer were found not only secrets that involved work being done at Los Alamos, but this is what's really bizarre. Secrets of Britain's Trident nuclear missiles.
Why do we have those in Los Alamos?
I don't know. So not only is the FBI involved in this investigation, trying to find out why this top secret material was taken by this woman and hidden in her trailer, but MI6 is involved. The CIA wants to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the question is, was this lady just trying to fuel her drug habit, or was she in fact selling information to terror organizations?
And did she work for Wackenhut? No, we laugh, but Wackenhut is the company guarding these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Wackenhut that pays minimum wage.
Yeah. It's, boy, you know, it really is amazing that Los Alamos is still functional and that they still have the trust of the government to work with anything of a top secret nature, because it's almost an annual thing that something comes out about a leak at Los Alamos, missing computer drives. In this particular case, some documents and computer drives. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the computer drives held the information about the British missiles. And then, again, over the last 50 years, over 660 pounds of plutonium unaccounted for. So,
and that's just that one location. There are so many places all over the world that have somehow lost plutonium or other nuclear mm-hmm. material that just blows my mind. But, you know, speaking of MI6 and spies, mm-hmm. you and I were talking about this yesterday, and I have this theory about the new James Bond movie. You wanted to know why they were redoing Casino Royale.
Right.
Well, the first one was great, and I agree. Why redo it? Mm-hmm. So maybe, and I have not seen the previews, I've not read if it's an exact copy of the original, but if it is, and the enemy is Russia, then this, mm-hmm. by redoing an old movie and taking it back and saying James Bond is just now starting again, we can go back to Cold War days.
That's a good point. You get a very interesting glimpse into who the enemies of the powers that be are by watching movies like that.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Cold War years, yeah, it was Russia or Red China.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went through a period after Yeltsin and, you know, Russia breaking down, you know, East Germany being repatriated with West Germany. And it was no longer politically correct to portray Russia mm-hmm. as the bad guy, where we saw a few movies with like South Africa as mm-hmm. the bad guy, you know,
or
the villains,
Balkan nations.
Or a Balkan nation. Yeah, right.
If you look at Air Force One, it was a Balkan.
Yeah, it was a Kazakhstan or something. Yeah. North Korea in one of the recent Bond mm-hmm. movies. So now it could be that we're going back to Russia. And Russia is still feuding with Georgia. Mm-hmm. They've got problems going on there where they have basically expelled a number of foreign workers with visas from Georgia. Or rather, Russia has expelled the Georgian mm-hmm. workers back to Georgia. They're threatening now to double the cost of natural gas.
Oh, yeah.
Shipped to Georgia
Mubarak
this winter.
Just went to visit Putin.
Yeah.
And Putin was just there.
Mubarak has said I read a story that he's encouraging Putin to run for a third term, which would require changing the Russian constitution.
Yes. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That information is coming from Mubarak.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin has been, if you've not been listening to PID radio, if you've been living on the moon, Vladimir Putin is extremely popular. And he is tantamount to being a demigod with some people, mm-hmm. because I think they see him as someone who goes back to the old Cold War days,
mm-hmm.
who really is leading Russia into a glory time again. And he's really cracking down on the former satellite nations
mm-hmm.
from the USSR. He's the king of gas and petroleum,
right,
there in Russia, and he's been saying no, I know two terms is all I'm allowed, and I'll just bow out and fade away, and they've been clamoring for it.
Right. No, and just in terms of nuts and bolts, he's done some pretty amazing things with Russia. He's paid off Russia's foreign debt, so mm-hmm. it is now out
almost
of debt.
Totally.
Yeah.
In fact, they may have totally paid it off by this year.
I've read that they have paid it off totally, which is an amazing thing for a nation whose economy was pretty much in a shambles during the Yeltsin mm-hmm. years. This is an amazing turnaround. And here in America, we look at this and think, well, gosh, why can't we do something like that? Well, it's because he's nationalized the petrochemical industries. I mean, mm-hmm. if we want to go that route and have central government control over our major industries, you know, I suppose we could follow suit. But
no, we have our major industries controlling government.
It's the other way around. Yeah, we got two heads of the same coin there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on.
Same eagle.
Yes. We'll point out again, in case you haven't missed our previous programs, that the national symbol of Russia is the double-headed eagle, which is also the symbol of 32nd, 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemasons, which is, of course, the double-headed eagle of Lagash, the
also
ancient...
known as the
It's
Phoenix.
The Phoenix. It's the ancient symbol of the god Ningirsu from ancient Sumer, which was the symbol of Nimrod. Yeah, so there you see a lot of connections that...
Oh, so many connections.
...relate to the hidden war going
Another
on.
Another connection, before I forget, I brought it up. I mentioned Iran a few minutes ago and how it relates to Nazi Germany.
This was something that really shouldn't be as hidden as it is, because there are plenty of pictures on the web that say this so much more clearly than any explanation that I can give. And I'll tell you about the pictures first and then go through the details in just a second. But go to the, go to your favorite search engine and just Google, you know, search for the words salute and then Hamas, or salute and Fatah, F-A-T-A-H. Just do that and you'll see what we mean. These groups that are tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, or Hamas is, Hezbollah, that's another, Hezbollah and salute. Hezbollah tied, of course, to Iran and their Shiite fundamentalism.
By the way, do this on Google Images.
Right, and because what you're looking for are pictures.
I just did it. Whoa, there they are. They all pop up.
And they're goose-stepping. All right, goose-stepping and doing the Nazi salute.
The Nazi salute, the 45-degree angle, outstretched arm.
Right. Bear in mind that there is nothing like the Nazi salute in Arabic culture or the Islamic religion. This comes straight from 1940s Germany, and there's a direct line of descent. And when the powers that be use the phrase Islamic fascism, they're accurate. However, they're leaving out a few key details. The Muslim Brotherhood was essentially founded by the remnants of Arabic agents working for the SS during World War II in Egypt, to try to sabotage British interests there. The same with Iran, and the same with what is now Iraq. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was an officer in the Waffen SS, and he was wanted to be the ruler of a pan Arabic Islamic state headquartered in Jerusalem. They were essentially, they trained divisions of Arabic SS soldiers to fight in the Middle East. After World War II, they didn't just go away, nor did the SS just disappear. A lot of the SS officers were, and German intelligence agents were absorbed by MI6 and the CIA and protected by those organizations from other elements within the British and American governments that would have liked to take them to trial at Nuremberg, because it was felt that we needed those guys in the fight against the communists in Russia. And so the Muslim Brotherhood was sheltered, protected, moved to Saudi Arabia. The Saudis eventually got tired of them, kicked them out. They went back to Egypt, where they are now gaining political power, just as Hezbollah is gaining political power in Lebanon, and Hamas is gaining political power in the Palestinian territories. That's a very simplistic explanation. I would recommend to you the research of Dave Emery and his website, which is SpitfireList, all one word, SpitfireList.com. And he's got show notes there from his program, which is called For the Record. And over the last 6 weeks or so, he's talked a lot about the connections between the fascists of World War II, the Germans especially, and the SS, and the radical Islamic elements that we see today. And again, the picture tells a thousand words. Look at the picture of Hezbollah giving the Nazi salute, the pictures of Fatah giving the Nazi salute, the pictures of Hamas with the Nazi salute. That's not an accident. They're not just copying something that they see from World War II. This is because these guys were trained by guys who learned from the guys who served in the SS or with the SS during World War II.
It's chilling.
It is chilling. But the thing is, the cooperation of the English into British intelligence and U.S. intelligence in helping this to set up, in helping set up these essentially divisions of the SS after World War II in Egypt, Saudi Arabia, what is now Iraq, Palestine, Iran, is being swept under the rug. So that's why somebody like George Bush, whose grandfather helped finance the Nazis during the 1930s, can call radical Islamists Islamofascists with a straight face. But the fact of the matter is that American and British intelligence played a huge role in protecting those elements of the SS and their connections in the Middle East for their own purposes. Now, what are those purposes? What is the, you know, I would have to ask the question, did the Nazis actually lose World War II?
Well, I don't think so. I'll be honest. I think that World War II never ended.
Yeah.
Just like World War I never ended. Mm-hmm. It's all the same war. There's
right.
just been different tactic. You know, there have been tactical changes. And that's what's so odd about this whole war on terror. As mm-hmm. you have said, it's not a war on a nation. It's a war on a tactic.
Yeah. And if we actually declared it a war on that particular idea and actually researched what that idea was, where it came from, and how it got to be where it is today, I think most Americans would be shocked, just as I was shocked listening to Dave Emery discussing this chain of events that led from World War II through the Arabs in the middle during World War II, who saw in the Nazis an ally to help them achieve their goal, which, of course, was kicking the Jews out of, the destruction of the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And lest you think we forgot, the connection to Iran is this, that Iran was Persia until the 1930s. Now, I'll have to look up the date as to when this actually took place. But the name of the nation, Iran, is from the Farsi word for Aryan, as in the Aryan race.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Persians, who are not Arabs, saw themselves as genetic kindred to the Germans.
That's right. I've told you this before. I had a very close friend back in Indiana who was born in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't call it Iran. He referred to his homeland as Persia.
Mm-hmm.
But he would often tell me stories when we'd talk politics and this and that. And he would say, well, you know, of course, that the white Europeans' culture, the language, everything came out of Persia.
Mm-hmm.
And it all had Aryan roots, is what he would literally say.
Yep. And that's why the Shah in the 30s, I believe it was in the 30s, changed the name of the nation from Persia to Iran to show their solidarity with the chosen race in Germany.
This is so creepy. And now let's add another little element. Let's go over to the Western side of the world, to South America, where a lot of expatriated German soldiers, mm-hmm. officers, ended up.
Right.
Could that be why we see such a strong bond being formed between, say, Venezuela and Iran?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know what the influence of
those
the...
Those guys are big buddies.
Yeah, and I don't know what the connections were between the expatriate Germans and the Venezuelan government. I know they were very strong in Bolivia, even mm-hmm. until the 80s, with Klaus Barbie,
mm-hmm.
Paraguay.
We'll have to do a little research on that.
Yeah, this is
we need
to do another show.
To remind you that it has not yet been debunked, the story that came out a few weeks ago about George W. Bush buying about 10,000 acres of land down in
Paraguay,
the aquifer down there.
Yeah, Guarani.
Yeah,
Guarani
exactly.
Aquifer, which is the largest source of fresh water in the world.
That
supposedly
has not been refuted.
No, it's been ignored.
Totally.
By media.
Well,
we've got more important
business. We've got this election thing. We've got to know exactly how many seats the Republican Party will win or lose.
Yep. 1935, by the way, is when Persia changed its name to Iran.
That was about the right time.
Yeah. And that was the reason, because Iran, land of the Aryans. That's what it means in Farsi.
Well, write to us if you have any more information on this, or if you simply, you know, want us to tell you what our sources are. Kudos to Derek for finding that stuff. I had never seen these pictures. I was just dumbfounded when you showed me those pictures the first time.
It is really amazing. And again, it's not just one group within the Islamic world. You know, Fatah and Hamas, who are busy killing each other right now for control of the Palestinian territories,
mm-hmm.
Hezbollah, these are the guys, one of the pictures there, I think Fatah was, those were the police forces for the West Bank or something.
Yeah.
It's
a little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
that's from the exact quote you told me to put
Salute
in.
Salute Fatah, and you come mm-hmm. up with about a dozen hits on Google Images. Well, again, Dave Emery is the guy who's been doing this research and has done the connections. He's been researching fascism and its many, many offshoots for years. And this is just one aspect of it. Its connections to the radical Islamic groups like Fatah, Hamas, Hezbollah today, the Muslim Brotherhood. And what's really disturbing when you see these connections to Nazi Germany in World War II and the way it was shepherded along and facilitated by MI6 and the CIA after World War II, you see that this is a much bigger battle taking place, spiritual battle, than you would have thought. And the idea that World War II brought an end to the Nazis and their belief system, and that these little pseudo Nazis, the neo-Nazis walking around today with their, you know, their militia uniforms or whatever, are just a bunch of wannabes, I think is a very naive understanding.
I know. And by the way, speaking of spiritual battles, Ariel Sharon was moved to intensive care this past week. And I think he tends to be forgotten, assuming he really is genuinely still alive. And they're not just artificially keeping him alive so they can announce his death at some, you know, really important moment. I just go back to, it's been about 10 months since he went into a coma, and I just go back and try to imagine why he needed to be taken out of the way. And, of course, we get into the whole Shimon Peres eventually taking over. He's now second in line.
But he's not a spring chicken anymore either. No, I don't know how much time he thinks he's got to run.
No, but
things.
I think the same could be said about Dick Cheney. He's not spring chicken either. Yeah. He's younger than Perez. But
yeah.
I look at that and I think back, there were other things that happened at all about that same time. And one of those was Prince Charles marrying his longtime lover, so to speak. I say that word. I'm not really sure that that word applies. But I won't get into that here. but also at the same time, we lost Pope John Paul II, and we got Pope John Pope Benedict. A lot of important things happened in royal houses because the Pope, in many ways, is a royalty. And Charles, I have said many times, I really do think that that whole wedding was a pagan ceremony. And if you want more on that, I can send you back to things that we wrote regarding her wheat crown and the symbolism there and her name and how it all ties in with Diana's death. And it's just really creepy, but it ties in with pagan beliefs so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to spring, of course, the vernal equinox. It all happened about that same time.
Mm-hmm. Many, many things happening in and around the world. Let's look at a part of the world we just touched on earlier, and North Korea. It appears that, and this is according now to Bill Gertz of the Washington Times, who often writes on intelligence matters. Bill Gertz, a good and faithful member of the Unification Church. The Pentagon has stepped up planning for an all-out assault, well, not an all-out assault, but an assault on North Korea's nuclear facilities. Officials speaking to him on condition of anonymity said that the planning includes detailed programs for striking a plutonium reprocessing facility at Yongbyon with either a special ops commando raid or a strike by a Tomahawk cruise missile or cruise missiles. Again, the idea that we would attack North Korea when Seoul is within the range of North Korea's artillery is a bit frightening.
Mm-hmm. And we were going to pull out of South Korea, and now we are going to put missiles there.
Yes, nuclear missiles.
Assuming they ever left.
Yes, assuming that they... See, according to publicly released information, we pulled our nuclear weapons out of South Korea in 1991.
Right.
So, assuming that that's true, they're going back in after 15 years. But it appears that plans are being drawn up for an attack on North Korea. Now, the fact that this information was released doesn't mean the information itself is necessarily accurate. It may just be this is the Pentagon's way of sending a back-channel message to Kim Jong-il.
So, no, it very much could be.
Yeah.
Things are really, really interesting there. And you've been discussing things with some political gentleman over at the university who has political savvy, one of the professors there. And I don't know how he is on North Korea as far as politics, but you might want to ask him next time you're there. But Japan has been very vocal about Kim Jong-il's propensity toward nuclear weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's because they are just one rocket, you know, away from
right.
North Korea. Japan does not want him to have nuclear weapons.
Right.
However, Japan doesn't seem to mind if Iran has nuclear weapons. Now, let me tell you why I think that's interesting. Japan has this, and we're talking about the crown here,
mm-hmm.
owns a great deal of percentage in a company that was heavily involved in an oil exploration field in southwest Iran.
Okay, you say the crown. You mean the emperor of...
The emperor.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, even though they are actually a royal... gosh, what are they called? It's when you actually are run... It's sort of like England. You're mm-hmm. actually run by House... It's the House of Commons. I'm sorry, I'm losing the...
Oh, the Japanese legislature.
Yeah, I know. It's actually government. Got... The type of government actually has a name, and I'm just parliamentary...
Monarchy?
Yeah, it's like that. Anyway, this company has essentially been kicked out for the most part. I think they own about 10% of it now mm-hmm. because the oil field has all but been nationalized.
Right.
So I'm looking to see what Japan does now. Will Japan turn and say, no, you know, we've really never been in favor of Iran having nuclear weapons? What I'm saying is, while we might, while President Bush and the Emperor of Japan and all of these other heads of state stand up and say, no, we cannot have nuclear weapons in the hands of people we don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
What it comes down to is we can't have you having something unless we get something in return.
Yes, and I think more proof of that is the fact that Dick Cheney's former company, Halliburton, is over there and working on negotiations with Iran to provide oil field services to several of the major oil fields in Iran. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mentioned that on the air one night, and some guy called up and was really irate with me for being such a left-wing liberal. Yeah, Cheney doesn't have anything to do with Halliburton anymore. He divested himself of all of his stuff.
Yeah, but I think it was the same day or the next that you got called a right-wing.
Well, so you're right. And it was really interesting to see that Halliburton was actually in there negotiating with the government of Iran for this contract, because in the business that I was formerly in, which was, as a steel pipe salesman, we were not allowed to do business with Iran. There were certain countries where we could not make a sale if we knew that the end user was located in North Korea, Iran, Sudan, Libya for a while, but they're okay now,
mm-hmm.
and Syria. And, so, you know, if this country was, if the material was being bought and routed through a third country and then eventually on mm-hmm. to, say, Sudan, we couldn't do it. The Department of State would step in and impound the material and fine us if we we had to, you know, get to the point where we were having guys sign releases. Yes, we promise we're not going to resell this material. And yet for Halliburton, apparently it's okay. That doesn't apply. And other companies like Halliburton.
Dick Cheney.
Well,
you know, I'm glad you brought up Libya. We just haven't talked about Muammar Gaddafi nearly enough.
Well, that's true.
Where is he these days?
Hanging out with Waldo, no doubt.
I saw him. Didn't he go to the Conference of the Unaligned Nations?
He probably did.
I think he did. And I know he also hangs out with, he's gone to a couple of the inaugurations for the presidents down in South America. I don't think he's changed at all. I really don't. I think he struck a deal somewhere along the line. Remember, they came out and said, okay, moo-moo, our bad. We did the whole Lockerbie thing.
Right.
And since that, President Bush, you know, about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
said, oh, okay, you're good guys now. Back on the list.
Yeah.
You're approved.
Right. So, they're no longer part of the axis of evil.
Yeah, favored nation status,
mm-hmm.
as I recall.
Uh-huh. Well, it's all about whether or not they want to play ball.
Mm-hmm.
And
play ball. He's speaking of play ball. This is a total left turn.
And it's about time.
Hang on. Okay, hats fell off. We're not allowed to leave the United States anymore unless we get permission.
Under proposed restrictions, which are being slipped through by back channel methods, we may not be able to leave the country without permission.
Now, lest you think, you can't now without permission. You have to get a passport if you want to go to most other countries. Yes, you may be able to leave, but mm-hmm. try to land and actually get out of the airport. This actually means if you get on a boat to go fishing in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Outside of...
If you're leaving the 3-mile limit or whatever, 12-mile or whatever it is.
Right.
Going into international waters.
If you're going to leave the country under these proposed restrictions, that may be the case. Now, this is according to a gentleman named Edward Hasbrock, who writes a blog called The Practical Nomad about travel issues and how to travel on the cheap. Essentially, the Department of Homeland Security has proposed that airlines, cruise ships, and operators of all other ships and planes, including charter flights, air taxis, fishing vessels, you name it, have to get individual clearance from the Department of Homeland Security for every single passenger on their list before they depart.
Picture the bottleneck.
Right. You've got an airplane of 270 people getting ready to leave Boston's Logan Field for London.
Oh.
Yes.
The commercial that's on now for Visa credit cards. Visa check cards.
Okay, right.
Picture that. If you have not seen that commercial, it's a cafeteria line, and they're playing music from cartoons, and everyone's moving through line. Things are flying through. It's just a well-oiled machine of people grabbing their food, swiping their cards, mm-hmm. and moving along. And along comes this guy with cash.
Money,
yes. Well, the kind of bottleneck that this is going to provide will require... This chaotic bottleneck
mm-hmm.
will require some sort of order.
Yeah, which would likely require people, encourage people to go for some sort of smart card.
Mm-hmm. Smart passports that they are selling people on in Great Britain.
Right, for getting out of the country. Now, the way the restrictions have been proposed by the Department of Homeland Security is that it would be the responsibility of the individual airline, air taxi, fishing vessel or whatever to forward their passenger list to DHS for approval before they leave. And if DHS does not respond with a yes and approval for each name on that list, anyone who is not, you know, even if they don't answer, even if they say we're still checking on someone on the list, that person is not allowed to board the plane, train, automobile, vessel, whatever, nor is their luggage allowed to be loaded.
But I can vote in the state of Missouri without showing any
picture ID. Yeah, because that's a right. But apparently the right to leave the country is not. And this is really an interesting change because this is not something that's been voted on by Congress. This is something that the Department of Homeland Security is pushing through as regulations through the Department of Transportation and so forth.
Bush only has to do an executive order, and suddenly it's there.
And suddenly it's essentially law. So we've got that going on. Meanwhile, we've talked about Jerome Corsi to some degree over the last couple of months and the objections that he's raised to the Trans-Texas Corridor, or the NAFTA Superhighway, as he mm-hmm. calls it, the North American Union, the secret meeting that took place at Banff, Alberta, back in September. He and a group of others have formed a coalition to try to put a stop to the forthcoming North American Union. His claim, according to the documents that he's received through Freedom of Information Act requests, is that the Security and Prosperity Partnership, little working group inside mm-hmm. the Department of Commerce.
That was created by an executive order.
Which was created by an executive order, is in fact making law, international law, by what they call harmonizing regulations mm-hmm. with Canada and Mexico. Well, you can't engage, you can't make treaties without the approval of the Senate under the United States Constitution. And there were members of Congress, I don't know about the Senate, but there were members of Congress that didn't even know that this SPP existed mm-hmm. until Corsi pointed out. Other members of this group, it looks like a pretty Dominionist group, to be honest with you, include Phyllis Schlafly and some others. But at least he is getting some attention. Lou Dobbs has been talking about it on his program on CNN.
You're going to be talking to Lou Dobbs.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, this week.
Yeah, Lou will be on the show. We're going to have to record it earlier in the day Thursday because of his schedule. He's on the air the same time I'm on the air. That wouldn't have worked well for him. You know, I suggested that we just do it as a dual interview and have me on his show, but you know, his producer didn't think that was such a great idea.
And so, you're who again?
Yeah. But his new book, War on the Middle Class, kind of touches on this. And That's something I want to find out. It appears to us that what's happening is that the powers that be, the corporate leaders of North America, not just the U.S., but Canada and Mexico as well, seem to think that they are the board of directors of all 350 million of us.
Yes.
And that we are the folks in the mailroom and on the production line.
Well, there was a story on Watcher Magazine a few weeks back, and we'll try to link to it. Make a little mental note.
Yes.
Link to story.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting that took place down in Mexico before the Banff meeting. Mm-hmm. And this Mexican meeting, which took place, I think, in August, was just business people from Walmart and huge gas companies and all of these huge corporations that all got together from Canada, Mexico, and the United States and essentially decided we all need to merge.
Yeah.
For business reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So get back and kick butt in your respective nations. And that's what happened. And suddenly there was a Banff meeting. I don't know how far in advance that was planned, if these people knew the meeting was coming up, because it's in the minutes from their meeting that they were told to go back and talk to their respective government people. I started to say employees. And tell them. We need to merge.
In effect, that's what it is. If we're the people in the mailroom and on the production lines, then the elected officials, our elected officials, are essentially middle management.
Yes.
And these corporate CEOs are the board of directors.
Yeah.
And what's really disturbing about the Banff meeting is that it was not just business leaders, but it was the, Donald Rumsfeld was supposed to be there, but he had to back out at the last minute. So his place was taken by General Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And the commander-in-chief of NORAD was there, and his military counterparts from Canada and Mexico. Mm-hmm. So there were some pretty high-ranking government officials there, including former Secretary of State George Shultz, former Secretary of Defense Cohen was there, and there were other, you know, big mucky mucks.
We'll link to this story as well. All the names are there.
But essentially what it boils down to is this. One world government is the direction in which we're heading. They want to break down national barriers because they're an impediment to the efficient movement of people and goods. The Democrats view people coming across the borders as a potential voting bloc, and so they don't want to stop it. Republicans and their supporters in big business see them as cheap labor, and so they don't want to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to stop.
Oh, yeah. If you're sitting there thinking, oh, you know what? This would never really happen, that we actually became one big conglomerate country. There were those back in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up who we all talked about how Europe would eventually become one bloc country. And they were in the process. It was the common market at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were preaching it, you know, to all of our friends. And even as late as the late 1880s. Yes, I'm that old. The 1980s. and even 1990s, I was saying to my own family in the early 1990s, watch, the European Union is it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They're going to be one big voting bloc country, and they're all going to have one, you know, well, I guess actually this was the late 1980s. Instead of 90s. And they would look at me like I had snakes coming out of my head and say, oh, yeah, you poor thing.
Yep.
Here, drink some milk.
And let's loosen that tinfoil hat. It's clearly shutting off the flow of your. Yeah, it is. I get some of that at work, too. But I will say the young man who produces the program is beginning to come around. He was a diehard, hardcore, 100% Republican. And now he's starting to say, well, gee, maybe this is a little more complex than I thought. And like, well, you're going to come to that conclusion a lot earlier than I did, because I didn't reach that state until my late 30s. So good on you. Very quickly on the elections, there are a couple of interesting things. Have you noticed how many stories have hit the news, various segments of the news media over the last couple of weeks, about electronic voting machines?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're setting it up now in advance.
Oh, yeah.
Don't expect the results to be known and final on Wednesday morning, November 8th. We're going to be fighting this election for a week or two, I think, maybe longer.
Unless it is a landslide. And even then, someone might say, landslide?
How did that happen?
That never happens.
Yeah, because all of these results, the pre-election polls are showing all of these Senate races in a dead heat. It appears the Democrats will win a number of seats in the House, But they're showing that all of these Senate races, especially here in Missouri, one of the key races between Senator Talent and Claire McCaskill, dead heat within the margin of error. But from California, citizens out there have found that electronic voting machines made by Sequoia have a little yellow button on the back, which, when you manipulate it a certain way, allows the voter to vote as many times as he or she wants. Interestingly, Sequoia was the company recently purchased by Smartmatic, the company which is being investigated by Department of the Treasury for its connections to the government of Venezuela.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. In Florida, Diebold machines. A voter at a polling place near Fort Lauderdale reported that in trying to vote early, because they did allow early voting in Florida beginning last week.
Some states do.
Right. When, with his touchscreen vote, tried to cast a ballot for Jim Davis, the Democratic candidate for governor. When he'd get to the final confirmation screen, it would show a vote for Republican Charlie Crist. And the explanation given by the county clerk in that county was that, after heavy use, these machines become uncalibrated, and we have to recalibrate the screen.
Heavy use? It was early voting.
Yeah, and they only get used like once a year. So how heavy a use can you get? I've got a PDA that I've used for 4 years now, and the screen is never decalibrated to the point that when you touch on it in one place, it skips like to the next place. So the Diebold machines are causing problems. Here in Missouri, the machines from ES&S, which is the company that was heavily connected to Senator Chuck Hagel of, where's he from, Iowa? Kansas? Iowa. Nebraska.
Nebraska, yes.
Yeah, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, who incidentally, when he was first elected to office, was a shock, major surprise, upset victory. Yeah. here in Boone County.
Honey, your hat's back on.
Yeah. Here in Boone County, we didn't get the ballots or the equipment needed to load the ballots into the electronic voting machines early enough, and so they're running about 10 days behind at the county clerk's office here. In fact, she put out a call last Wednesday looking for more workers
to get through the election day. I would venture to say that there are many beleaguered workers who are facing the same problem in states across America, especially the ones that are the battleground states.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting. We're going to have fun on Tuesday night, though, at the radio station. We got a group of us that'll be there. I'll have to make plans to bring in pizza for everybody because we got some folks like our morning team. You know, they get there at 4 a.m. and then they're going to be back at night from 7 until 10 while we announce results.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of fun being in the center of that whirlwind there and, you know, calling out the results as they come in and talking to politicians and their parties, whether they be victorious or not so victorious. It should be an interesting night.
You know, if you want to listen to that, if you're just insane enough to want to hear Derek and his friends on Tuesday night, you can listen to that online.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in case you're inclined to hear it. But we're going to have some fun in there, and I look forward to that on Tuesday night, just calling out the results. But as I said, I don't think we're going to know the final results in some of these races for a while. I think there's going to be some challenges raised, and this may be another 2000 again, where the lawyers wind up settling the winners.
Well, maybe by the time we do this show next Sunday, we'll have a little more information that we can talk about. And let's just pray that between now and then, nothing happens. No November surprises happen.
Yes.
That shake up the country in a way that really is harmful.
Right. Meanwhile, as Sharon said, if you've got any questions or comments for us, you can always write us, Derek@peeringintodarkness.com, Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com, or if you want to hit both of us, just radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
That's right. We both subscribe to that one, and we'll both write you back.
That's right.
And if you want to join us at the forum, you may do so. And if you're joining us just to spam us, curse you!
That's all right. We've got people assigned to that duty.
That's right. We may not have official people who sort of keep an eye on those forums, but there are those who are very, very faithful about letting us know that improper posts have gone on, or people just are simply spamming.
And we've got a real wide variety of views, and we appreciate them all. As long as they're cordial and we exchange ideas in a civilized fashion, there are a lot of views exchanged there, definitely outside the norm.
You know, I think one of the great things is in many ways that it's become this virtual coffee shop where people do go in and share ideas. Not everyone agrees, but for the most part, I say 99% of the time, it is done with such cordiality and such love.
Yeah.
And I think it's really opened some eyes. It has mine.
Mine too. Really unique place. Thanks again for listening. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.